You know I'm right. Nick Durst here with Joe Calabrese. And Joe, as our residential Michigan guy on the podcast, I am very excited for our guest today.
Yeah, and I bet that comes as a surprise, but if you can see my shirt, you can kind of vaguely make out the Great Lakes shirt that I'm wearing here. But yes, I am the resident Michigan expert specifically in the Grand Rapids area, which is Kent County. So I think our guest is going to like that pretty much. But he works in sports. He's another Q's grad. We got another Q's grad on with us. We love our Q's grads. You get to talk about that with him. So it's going to be a lot of fun. He's currently a reporter and studio host for NBCSN. He is Ahmed Farid. Ahmed, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey guys, great to talk with you. Joe, I didn't even know that. You were holding back. What high school? What high school in Grand Rapids?
She is the pride of Granville High School, which is also where Devin Booker went to high school. And yeah. Now we may see a kid in the future for Devin Booker. But in terms of who I know, it was a girl I dated long distance for a couple of years. We're still really close friends. She lives in Wyoming, which is a suburb kind of south of downtown Grand Rapids, about 30 to 35 minutes. So I know the area very well. And we got to drive around there, got to go to a couple places on Lake Michigan. We got to go to Grand Haven, which is, I mentioned this, I think, once on the podcast before, I believe. But for anybody who's seen the American Pie movies, American Pie 2 is loosely based on that area. So it's really, really great. You were very, very lucky to grow up. That area in Western Michigan is gorgeous. It's the right mix of everything.
That's what I tell people all the time. People think it's like Canada, which sometimes it is, you know, sometimes. For like 7 or 8 months of the year, it is Canada.
It's a little cold up there.
Yeah, but summertime's great. And you're not going to meet nicer people than in Michigan and the Midwest. I know that they're trying to make it into a battleground state right now. Get out of here with that. We're good people there. So, yeah, I'm very proud of being a Michigander.
Yeah, and you know, you've been all over. We got to start off with the hard-hitting question here right off the gate. Michigan, New Jersey, Virginia, the Bay Area, who's got the best food, and specifically, who's got the best pizza?
I'm the worst person to ask on that because I'm not like a foodie. And I tell that to people all the time, and they go, what pizza do you like? And I go, Domino's. And they go, oh, that's how can you even say that?
Better than Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut's better, I think.
Well, I don't know about that.
Have you ever gotten to an all-you-can-eat pizza buffet?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Those were the best. All-you-can-eat breadsticks, too, with it? Oh, my God. The best. But I feel like that's a very Michigan thing as well. We like our chain restaurants. We like our Applebee's. We like our fast food. And so I'm not really an adventuresome foodie. So I've despite traveling all over the country and working West Coast, East Coast, Midwest, I have sampled the fast food restaurants from all the different places, and that's about it. So I'm the worst person to ask on that. But it's been cool to see other people eating all the great food from all around the country. I will give you that.
Sorry. So fast food, you're out, eat something quick. Are you going to McDonald's, Wendy's, or Burger King?
Well, we like Chick-fil-A. We do like Chick-fil-A. I have two kids now. They're 7 and 5. And so it's like, I don't know how McDonald's does it. Like, me and my wife aren't big fans of McDonald's, but somehow they get in the heads of little kids.
Yeah.
And it's for the happy meal.
And the commercial.
It's the jingle. Man. Yep. Ronald McDonald, all of it. The trifecta gets them thinking McDonald's. So we've been going there a lot, but I'll go Wendy's and I'll go Arby's. To be quite honest with you, I don't discriminate. All the fast food restaurants are okay in my book.
Fair enough. Arby's is great. I mean, I think that if you want to consider it fast food, that's the mecca. That's the top dog in town. No doubt about it. So obviously, you know, you're growing up in Michigan, freezing, drought most of the months of the year, but you were just like, you know what? I can't get enough of the cold. I got to go to college in even a colder place, in Syracuse. Was it colder in Syracuse, or were you used to it from Michigan's cold winters?
It was pretty similar as far as temperature, but I'll be honest with you, it was cloudier, which I didn't think was possible because you get a lot of the lake effect cloud cover in Grand Rapids, but you get that in Syracuse as well. And I remember talking to so many people, and of course they've got a great journalism school there, and I would talk to a lot of my classmates, and we would go, you know, like, there's some good journalism programs in Florida. Did we not think about that? Did we not consider that at all? Like, I know it's important where you go to school, but it's not the end all be all. But no, I mean, I can't, complain. It was awesome there. I mean, like, they put a camera on my shoulder from my sophomore year on, and I mean, as you guys know, and a lot of people have gone through there. So I other than the terrible weather and the fact that there's no reason we can't move that school south, it was a great place for me.
So why a decision to pursue, you know, a degree in journalism or broadcasting? When did you decide on that in high school that you said, this is the path I want to follow?
Well, I think like a lot of people, they take those surveys in high school. It's like, what are you good at? What are your best subjects? And you fill it all out and it kind of tells you what you know, what you'd be best at. And I think mine was something like accounting, or because I was pretty good with math and numbers. And I was like, I don't know that I want to sign up for that right now as a 16-year-old person in Michigan. So, and a lot of my classmates were like, I want to be a professional athlete. And I was like, well, that would be fun, but I don't think I'm that good. But I was like, well, there are a lot of people that talk about sports. I was like, I like sports. And like, why can't I do that? And it just seemed like it was like one of those things in my mind. I was like, why wouldn't everyone choose this? And so I just went for it. And my senior year, I started looking for schools and colleges that had good programs for journalism or broadcast journalism. And then I just tried it. And I was like, if I'm going to do it, I might as well start right now and pursue it. And it was difficult. And there were so many of my classmates, and it could have been me, that it's just like there are too few jobs for too many people. And I sent out 150 resume tapes, and there was a chance that it just wasn't going to work out for me. But I was able to get a local job in Michigan just through connections. But honestly, like, I realize why not everyone does it, because it's not that realistic. And like, I would have never thought that I would get to this point that I'm at right now. I would have been perfectly happy, to be quite honest, guys, if I stayed in local news. It's where I started, weekend sports anchor, maybe work up to sports director, and just been in sports, because that's what I always thought from the beginning. I was like, I don't care if I make a ton of money, get famous. I just want to like do something that I enjoy. And I've been super lucky that I've been able to do that for this long.
Yeah, there seems to be some kind of ritual sacrifice for everybody who goes to Syracuse. You want to get known and you want to become famous. You want to be on TV. You got to go do 4 years or whatever in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the cold weather. But Cuse is still distinctively one of the best communication schools in the entire country, an excellent media and internship program. So I wanted to ask you about that. What did you do on campus? And you mentioned your classmates before. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, Nick and I have had the privilege of having a lot of really great Syracuse grads on with us. Our good friend, Lee McHugh, Nish Sharoff, who's also an ESPN guy. So did you know anybody when you were at Cuse who eventually would go on to do bigger and better things like you did?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many that I forget a lot of them, because someone will come up to me like, didn't you go to school with him? And I was like, I don't think he was in my class. And then they'll go, yeah, he graduated the same year you did. I was like, oops, okay. So I guess I did go to school with him. But like Carter Blackburn is a play-by-play guy that I went to school with, and Andrew Catalan is a Syracuse guy. I mean, like, honestly, there are so many, and I don't have that great of a memory, that it's just, I assume that most people that are in sports media right now, like, I probably went to school with that person. I should just play it safe and pretend I did. But it's twofold for Syracuse, right? They got great professors there. I had this Professor Nicholson, who's was an inspiration when I was there, and kept me going towards sports journalism. Even when I was like, do I want to do sports journalism? Maybe news journalism. That seems more important. You got more gravitas. And he's like, no, stay in the toys section here. And so I did that. But there are so many like-minded individuals that you gravitate towards Syracuse because you are serious about doing this business. And then you couple that with the good training and the internships. I worked at Z89, the radio station there. There's another radio station, WAER, that a ton of the play-by-play and sports media personalities go through. That also involved getting up at, you know, 3 a.m. to do the morning updates, which I did for a couple of weeks. But then I was like, Z89's offering me an opportunity to do a half hour, you know, sports cast at 11 a.m. I was like, maybe I'll do that instead. So I did that, and that was cool. I got to call some Orange Women basketball games. But I think that there's a little bit of, you know, you've got the professors that know the business. You've got some opportunities with various radio stations, and now I think more in the TV side than when I was there. And you just have some highly motivated students, and you throw all those three things together, and you can't help but have some that make it in this really tough business.
Yeah, and I think obviously what the school does a great job of is getting you in a position to put together a great tape. Obviously it worked for you, you sent it out. You end up working back in Michigan for your first job. What was that experience like for you being back near home? And how did you grow as a on-air personality in those early years?
Yeah, so I graduated from Syracuse and then moved back home to Michigan with my parents and started sending out tapes. And yeah, it was about 150. I was working at a golf course while I was home. I was job shadowing at the local Fox TV station. Shout out to Tim Doty and Brent Ashcroft, the two local sports guys that were there at the time that were like, yeah, come with us, tag along, improve your tape. And if I don't get to do that, maybe I don't break into the business eventually, because I was able to meet the sports director in Lansing, Michigan. And then there was an opening, and then that's how I got it. It wasn't any of the 150 resume tapes that I sent around the country. It was just the connections and the networking from there in Michigan. So yeah, I got that weekend job in Lansing, Michigan. And I was wearing braces at the time because I had a gap in my two front teeth. And so I was like, well, maybe that's why I'm not getting jobs. So I had braces, and so I'm wearing braces. I got my first job. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm awkward, you know? And so you really do. It's funny. It's like you need a safe spot your first couple of years. And I would argue you need a safe spot throughout your career too, because you are trying to learn your voice. You're trying to learn what your style is. And it's just repetition. It's just doing it a number of times, watching yourself back, hating what you see, and being like, I'm going to try to improve every day that I'm out there. And so that's basically what it was. It's like a warm environment where you're allowed to be yourself. And I think for me, early on for sure, but also when I went out to California and started working at the NBC Sports Bay Area, the regional network there for 6 years, that was really where I took another big step. And it was like, it was a kind of a California vibe. Don't take yourself or anything too seriously. And it was right there where I really kind of found my next voice and kind of the voice I have today. And we're talking, that's 5, 6, 7 years into my career. And so I think it's a evolution, honestly, guys. And I don't like the way I am now on the air. I think it'll probably be different than 10 years from now. So it probably never stops. You just keep developing and growing and turning into something new as you go.
Yeah, and you can see the evolution of your career with each stop. Was it tough for you, being in Michigan, working on air, to push yourself to say, all right, I need to now leave, go somewhere else, because that's the best way for me to grow. I need to leave my comfort zone.
I always wanted to go. I would not have chosen to take my first job in my home state. I wanted to go see the country. I was sending tapes to Bakersfield, California, Bemidji, Minnesota, Meridian, Mississippi, Tyler, Texas. I mean, these were all places I was like, I just want to see another part of the country. So I've always been highly motivated to go and travel. And I mean, my parents and my mom was a travel agent when I grew up. So we traveled a ton, and she was always like, go. You know, even though I'm an only child, she was like, go experience the world, go experience the country. And so that support made it easier for me. And so, yeah, no, when I was done with my 2 years in Michigan, I just started sending resume tapes again and found a job in Norfolk, Virginia, at another local TV station there for 5 or 6 years or however many years it was, and experienced it there. But I'll be honest with you guys, in Virginia, once I got there and I met my wife there, I would have stayed there for the rest of my life. I liked it there that much. And I liked the beach, and I liked the way of life. I would have stayed there my entire career. I was very comfortable, but I had an agent at that time, and he started sending resume tapes all around. And then one got to MLB Network, and an audition later, I was up there and trying out, and I got that job. But it's like, people are like, you got to always be highly motivated in this business. If you're not looking for the next job while you have your current job, you're not going to make it. And for me, I think it's almost the opposite. I think you got to take each job as like, if I stayed here the rest of my life, would I be happy? And so it's like, make it that job, make it the job where I could retire here. And it just so happened for me that I haven't been able to quite do that yet, but I look at each job that way.
It's an interesting nugget that you would have stayed there. I don't think a lot of people would admit something like that, but luckily yeah. you did have an agent. And one of the more popular questions that Nick and I like to ask our guests when we have them on here is the agent question. And so for the most part, it's close to 50-50. I would say a majority of the people we do have on have representation in some way. And a lot of people feel like a person such as an agent in that position helps them. So how did you land your agent? And what are the biggest benefits you think from having somebody in that position of representation for you?
Sure. So when I was in Virginia Beach, and I think it was my first year there, second year there, 2007, I got an email from Ben Stauber, who's now over at CBS and runs the talent division over there at CBS Sports. He was an agent at the time for IMG. And he was responsible for finding new up and coming younger talent. And so he emailed me and wondered if I would be interested in hooking up. And the deal at that time was I didn't pay him anything until I got the next job. And so for me, it was like a no-brainer. I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. Let's work together. And it wasn't really too much of a risk for him either. I don't think I wasn't like I was taking up a ton of his time. I'm not the type that's emailing my agent every other day. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just kind of low maintenance. As I told you guys, I would have stayed in Virginia for my whole career. So I think it worked out for both of us. But about 3 years later, he just got me an interview with MLB Network, and it took off from there. He ended up leaving. I'm now with Sharon Chang, who's with WME, and she has been awesome with me. We just have a really good relationship. I think it's different for everyone, obviously. With the agent question, I think if you have to pay up front, that's a tougher sell. I think you want to have incentives lined up where you're both kind of looking for that big gig, and it benefits you both. But I'm not a great networker. I just really am not. I just don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy, and some people really do. And so for those people, I say don't get an agent. If you really enjoy, and if you want to be the one in control and calling up people, and if you're hard on your agent that they're not doing that enough, I was like, then you should just do it yourself. Because if you have that skill, I think you don't need to pay the 10% or whatever, 5% or 6%, whatever you're paying. But for me, I don't enjoy that. And I've been lucky enough to be working with WME, and they're so good with it and so connected. And they know way more people than I do. I look at it as I would not be where I am without them. And so I will have, I believe, an agent for my entire career, just because I feel like in this business, it's so up and down, and it's so, you never know what's going to happen in 1, 5, 10 years from now, that it's nice to have someone in your corner, excuse me. So it's not right for everyone. If you like networking, I wouldn't do it, but I don't dig that part of it. And so I would gladly give that piece of control up to my agents, who have been really good so far.
Yeah, they've done a great job for you. You mentioned MLB Network, so you make this as a caucus. What was that like being there with a brand new network? I mean, you're giving a lot of freedom because they were still trying to figure some things out, but overall, what was it like being there around the launch time?
Yeah, I was there. So yeah, they launched, I think maybe it was only 2 years before I got there. So it still felt like I was joining an established network. But you're right. Most of those people still felt it as a new operation. I didn't feel like I belonged right away. I was like, what am I doing here? I would almost pinch myself. I'm like, what am I on MLB Tonight? What am I doing on Quick Pitch? And I'll be honest with you guys, like for 2 years, it almost felt like that. It just felt like this seems like over my head. And it was a great environment, great people there. My bosses were awesome to me. Coworkers were great. I loved working with all those guys. I still text with Dan Plesak and Bill Ripken and Harold every once in a while. And Greg Amsinger is one of the best, most talented hosts, I think, that is out there right now. So it was great being there. But it was only 2 years for me. And part of it was coming from local TV, I really enjoy that connection with a specific audience. And in my 2 years in MLB Network, I was kind of struggling because one, I didn't know if I fit in. And number two, it's like, you don't have that connection with your audience. It's like, who am I talking to? Am I talking to a Rockies fan right now? Am I talking to a Dodgers fan, Giants fan? You were talking to all of them, but at any one point, you didn't quite know who your audience was. And so at that point, I told my agent, Sharon, at the time, I was like, I kind of dig local. I kind of dig regional. Can we do that again? And she was, yeah. I mean, she didn't try to say, no, I'm a, this is national is where you need to be right now and forever. She goes, all right, let's go look for some other opportunities out there. But, you know, I don't think I'm able to do that as well at the Bay Area if I don't have those 2 years at MLB Network. And it's like, I think everyone needs that where it's like you feel like you're drowning to really make that next step.
Yeah, you make the move to the Bay Area and you bring along with you four championships. So you get three with the Warriors, the one with the Giants, and they haven't won a title since. It's looking pretty good for the Warriors this season, perhaps. But how much more fun and easier was it for your job to be covering championship teams?
It was, you're right, because I first got there, and right when I got there, within a month, I was at the Super Bowl with the 49ers, with Harbaugh when they were taking on the Ravens. And I know there are some people in the building that were like, how come he gets to go right away to the Super Bowl? And I was like, yeah, why do I get to go? but they put me in a spot right away where they were like, all right, you're going to be the guy. And it is so much easier when you have teams that are successful, especially on the West Coast, as I found out. I think it's probably the case anywhere, but especially on the West Coast, where if the teams are bad, it's more apathy rather than anger that kicks in. Whereas on the East Coast, when you have bad teams, sometimes it's even more interesting on the East Coast when the teams are bad, because you get more passion with all the negativity.
And Joe and his New York Jets and his fellow.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It's still interesting. Win or lose, you still get a lot of emotion and engagement, where I feel like in California, you get more apathy when the teams aren't very good, which is probably a healthier way to live our lives. But so it's crucial. Like if the teams are not good, just no one cares. So you always want people to care about what you're doing. And so while I was there, it was either the Warriors or the Giants or the 49ers. The Oakland was making the playoffs too, and they had some very good team with the A's. So it's night and day. I mean, I don't need to, that's not breaking news to anyone listening to that, but for me, it was just even more so being out on the West Coast.
I wanted to ask you quick where your sports loyalties lie, because growing up in that part of the state, I know a lot of people do root for the Detroit teams, but you know, some people I met actually root for the Milwaukee teams because they're right across the lake, and it's kind of strange. So I wanted to ask, do you root for your local hometown Detroit teams, or did you adopt another team while you were moving, you know, from place to place?
You always kind of adopt. So it's like, I still root for the San Francisco Giants, and the nature of Twitter, it's like most of my Twitter followers are from the Bay Area now. So I feel like I tweet about the Giants as much as anything. They're like, you're not even out there anymore. I was like, yeah, but all my followers on Twitter, it's like this weird quirk about Twitter is that wherever you get your most following, you're tweeting about that for the rest of your life, I would imagine. So I'll be tweeting about the Giants the rest of my life. But I grew up with all the Detroit teams. There are some, you're right, there are some people that are Green Bay Packers or, you know, more Wisconsin. I feel like the farther up north you go in Michigan, you get up to the Upper Peninsula, and that's a lot of Green Bay fans up there. But being Grand Rapids, no, we're 2.5 hours, 3 hours away from Detroit. So all the Detroit teams, Lions, Tigers, Pistons, I still root for University of Michigan football. And that was the team that I gravitated towards and all the people around me rooted for. So still Michigan loyal in all my rooting interests. And it's kind of cool in the business too. It's like that can come out even more now. I feel like it's more acceptable to show that you are a sports fan. You don't have to be this robot who grew up liking sports, but not liking any team, which is unrealistic. So it's been kind of fun, even though the teams aren't very good. It's been fun being able to let people know that I like those Detroit teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a wild ride for Detroit as of late. But you always have those Pistons team of 2004. Yep. I mean, what a great team that was.
I got to be, because I was working at the local Lansing station then, I was covering that game where they clinched it. I was in the locker room when the champagne was flowing. Kid Rock was in there. Still one of the highlights of my of my career. It's like Kid Rock's walking around holding the championship trophy. And I was like, this is, I was like, have I reached the pinnacle? I was like, I might as well just retire at this point. So it was like early on, I was like, all right, I think I picked the right profession.
It's pretty awesome. How did the opportunity come about for you to studio host for your first Olympics?
So working for NBC Sports Bay Area, you obviously have that connection with the mothership in Connecticut, where I'm at now. And so they would, I mean, there's so many shows, so many different platforms for Olympics for NBC, is that they're looking for people to fill those shows, to host a show or to do play-by-play of a specific event. And so they just called up my boss in the Bay Area in 2016, and they asked if they could steal me for 3.5 weeks. And luckily my bosses were okay with that. I don't know if they can say no technically, so maybe they didn't have a choice, but my bosses out there were like, yep, you can have them. And so, yeah, that was, I went out to Connecticut, stayed in a hotel for 3.5 weeks and hosted on USA Network the daytime for the Rio Olympics. And it was kind of an audition, I think, probably for future gigs. And I was able to handle it well enough in their eyes. It was funny. It was like when I got there, I was so nervous because it's like, you want to make a good impression. This is the national network. You're doing Olympics. It's like, my mom's freaking out. She's like, you're doing the Olympics? I was like, yes, I am. I was like, it's not the primetime show, but it's still pretty, pretty big. And as it goes, like the Olympics are such a grind. There's such a grind, and it's so many days in a row for everyone involved. And you really have to keep a positive attitude, which I've been lucky enough we have. But by the end of the Olympics, in the beginning of the Olympics, you're like, I hope they ask me back. By the end of the Olympics, you're like, do I want to do this again? This is really grueling. But it's such a great opportunity and such a great event to be a part of that. Luckily, I did well enough, and they asked me back in 2018. And then they were like, full time, come work with us after that. So that was, it's been a good run.
Yeah, I mean, those 20 days there for you in 2016, I guess, I mean, you must have been eating so much fast food. It could not have been too healthy. But obviously, you made a great impression with them 2018. They bring you on full time. Any hesitations there? And what exactly did they say to you as far as what you'd be covering when you joined them? And how has that emerged and changed since?
So I liked it so much in the Bay Area. It was the same thing as Virginia Beach, as I told you guys. It was, I could have stayed in the Bay Area my whole career because I really was enjoying it. I liked the people I worked with. I liked my bosses. I liked the vibe, as I told you guys. And so when my contract came up out there, I was ready to renegotiate, sign for another 3 or whatever years. And Connecticut called, the National Sports Group called my bosses again, and they were like, we would like to have Ahmed come out to Connecticut if he wants to. And my bosses were like, all right, you can talk to him about that. And so at that time, I've always been, obviously, as you've seen with my career, I've always been a kind of, you only live once. It's like, even though I want to stay somewhere, if another opportunity comes calling, who knows, maybe I'll like that place even better. And if I don't, it's not the end of the world, and I can always try to go back. That's always what I think. I was like, maybe I'll like it better. Let me experience it. And if I hate it, and if it really blows up and it was a bad decision, it's not permanent. I can always try to do something else. So that was how I looked at it. It was like, here's an opportunity to do something different, something new. And they weren't that specific on exactly what I would be doing. They said it would be a variety of different events. But I was okay with that because I was like, it'll work out however it's supposed to work out. And I think that's kind of like, that's Buddha talking there, and which is how I've kind of handled the career. I was like, it's going to work out the way it's supposed to work out. And so when I got here and my first day in Connecticut and touring around the building, I talked with a bunch of different people. And one of them was Rob Hyland, who produces Football Night in America and also does the Kentucky Derby. And he asked me, he goes, how much do you know about horse racing? And I go, nah, not that much. And he goes, perfect. And I go, perfect. I was like, there's no way that's perfect. And he goes, no, we want you to be curious. We want you to ask all the questions and let the analysts do their talking and let them be the experts. You're just kind of like the novice. And I was like, all right, we'll see how this goes. And And luckily they've been supportive of me in all these different sports now, horse racing and rugby and Premier League soccer and all things that I had very little knowledge of going in, but have been able to like somehow keep my head above water every once in a while. Like you'll get tweets every so often from people being like, do you even know what you're talking about? And I'll write back sometimes. No, I don't, but I'm getting there. So that's been my experience at the big NBC so far.
It seems like your voice is much more well-liked than you think it is. So I would imagine that's probably helping you land all these opportunities, especially opportunities that you wouldn't necessarily think about at first. But with all your Olympic experience, basically 5 years of it, Summer Games, Winter Games, I wanted to ask you your favorite event or favorite thing that you got to cover.
In Olympics? Let's think here. So I've been able to do some swimming, poolside reporting, not during the Olympics, but on the lead up to the Olympics. So some of the big time world FINA events and some Pan American Pan Pacific Games in Japan. That the studio stuff is great. The studio stuff is fun because you're able to watch a bunch of different events play out in real time. But being able to be there at an event and talk to the athletes immediately once they get out of the pool and learn about them and learn their stories, like I enjoyed that. I really did like being able to talk to Katie Ledecky and all the great American swimmers. But like it's really hard for me to pick one thing. I've enjoyed all my Olympics so far, and there have been three of them. I've enjoyed them because it is such a process and it is so difficult that when you get done with 21 days with a group of people who have all worked 21 days with you, you have this uncommon bond with them. Like I still keep in touch with producers and technical people that I've been working with on previous Olympics, because you feel like you've really done something together that not a lot of other people will do, or maybe even can do, you know, with the attitude of yes, we did it and we enjoyed the whole process. So it's kind of a roundabout answer, and it doesn't really answer your question, but I think just the idea of like completing the process has been really rewarding for me and a lot of people I've worked with.
Yeah, certainly a lot of talented people who work on the Olympics, especially behind the scenes, but on the air as well, taking people from all different walks of broadcasting and mixing them and mingling them, and you all do a great job. And of course, we're looking forward to the next games here coming up real soon. So can't wait to check you out there. And of course, now with Peacock, there's nonstop shows. So looking forward to that. Wanted to touch on, of course, the only thing we haven't touched on yet, which is your podcast with Chris Sims, Unbuttoned. We were talking about a little bit before we started the recording, but it's a really great show. And, you know, wanted to hear your thoughts when you first started with Chris, how you guys kind of formed your chemistry, because he could be a bit quirky, as I know working on him personally, but he's really smart. He was all over Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes years ago. He knew they were going to be great. He's a good evaluator of talent, but how was it, you know, being able to develop that chemistry with him?
We really did it on the podcast for the most part, because Chris is so busy doing Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio and all the other different things that he does, Football Night in America every Sunday. So he's super busy. And as I told you, I've been working on a bunch of different properties with NBC too. So I'm doing all those things. And so we really did develop the chemistry with the show. And he would say that year one in, he's like, we haven't even really hung out outside the show. And I was like, that's a great call. We need to change that. And then the pandemic hits and you're not allowed to. Yeah. You get yelled at for doing that. So it's been, we have grown our relationship almost exclusively on the podcast. And here recently I've been able to do some stuff on Peacock with him, the Sunday Night Football final show that comes on after Sunday Night Football, the highlight show. I've done that three times with him now. And we've been able to hang out a little bit more outside of work. So now finally it's starting to grow off air, but Chris is just so natural, and he has a way of talking on the microphone that indicates that he's talking with the people and not at people, which I think as we go through different phases in media, I think we're at the phase now where it's just like, if you're talking at your audience, you're behind. You really, this is the time where the audience is smarter than ever. I think the audience oftentimes will know as much, if not more, than you about a specific team or a player or a history of something. And so Chris does a really good job of giving his opinion, changing his opinion if it's not proven to be correct, and also not talking down to the audience and doing it all while making fun of himself and being self-deprecating and not taking himself too seriously. So it's like, I have so much respect for Chris because he does the work. He studies, he knows every player from every team. It seems like he's got an incredible memory and he's willing to have strong opinions and then change those strong opinions. So it's like, I look up to Chris a lot. And so, and he's looking to have a fun time. So it's made it really easy for us to have a show where we're having a fun time. And then hopefully the listener has a fun time listening to it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about that there. Wanted to ask you, what was your, either in your life, your career, your you-know-I'm-right moment? So what we mean by that is, you know, someone's telling you, you have to do something this way. This is it. It's the only way. And you said, I think we're going to do it this way. And in the end, you will see why I'm right.
Yeah. I think it's probably not one person who said you need to do it this way, but kind of like a feeling for most in the business is like, you need to be the authority. You need to be the one, because if you don't do that, why are people going to listen to you? And my vibe, which developed in California and I still think is here to this day, is that I don't think I have to be. I think I can be curious, and I think I can say, I don't know. And I think I can just be kind of like vibe control, if you will, guys. I don't think I need to be the teacher. I think I can just be the one that moderates a good vibe between the analysts and the panelists and people I'm interviewing. And if I do that in a fun way, and I think you see it from, you know, everyone talks about inside the NBA, like Ernie Johnson is that way. Like, he's not a teacher up there. He's not a lecturer. He's not, you know, no one looks at him and be like, oh, he knows more about the NBA than everyone. No, but he's able to facilitate a great show and keep the personalities going and bring out the best in everyone around him. So I think for me, it was like, I'm not going to ever take myself too seriously, no matter how much you think like that is what is supposed to happen. Like, I'm supposed to be the guy. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to do that. And if some people don't respect that and think, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, then so be it. But I'm just going to be me. And I'm not going to try to pretend I'm anything other than that. So that's basically my broadcasting philosophy 101.
My last question, it seems you're pretty open to moving around from place to place, even still. Is there anywhere that you haven't worked that you would like to work? If the opportunity presented itself in a way you couldn't say no to, you would move to? And I guess, you know, if there's a city around the world that you would want to go to, where would you want to go?
Yeah, I've got, you know, I'm getting to that point now where I've got a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and it's like, ooh, are we still going to move around? And for leverage purposes, yes, I will always be willing to listen to listen. So if any of my bosses, my agent wants me to say that, no, to be honest with you guys, like moving around has been a function of me taking jobs and opportunities that just seemed really exciting. It wasn't ever, and I feel like this is so lucky and not many people can say this. It's like, I haven't had to seek out those opportunities. I've just been willing to jump feet first into any new opportunity in any place that wanted me and thought I could help them. So no, I'm at a point in my career again where if I could stay here the rest of my life and there were exciting opportunities that kept me kind of mentally stimulated and I was able to take ownership of a few different properties that we have here, I would stay here for the rest of my life. But I'm always excited to try something new and to build something from scratch. And so whether that be here at NBC, having that opportunity or somewhere else, I'm never going to close myself off to those opportunities. But no, to answer your question, like I would stay here for the rest of my career, but that I've said that 3 other places now too, and it hasn't worked out. So who knows what's going to happen. But if I did Football Night in America last year because of a few extenuating circumstances. And when I was sitting in that chair, I thought, if this is it, and if I never do anything else again in this business, like, this was a good career. Like, honest to God, I was saying that. I was like, this, if I never do the show again, it's like, I never thought I would be here. And so from this point forward, and I know this sounds sappy, but everything is just gravy. You know, if they go tomorrow, if they're like, hey, Ahmed, your broadcasting career is over, I'll be like, man, that was a really good run. And so I'm just really appreciative of it. And I'm not looking for the next gig. I'm just happy that I've been able to do it this long.
Nick and I always appreciate really great original answers. And I think a lot of your answers, if not all of them, were really great original answers. And Ahmed, thank you for doing this with us. Really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck. If you end up staying in the Bay Area, if you end up moving elsewhere, you do a great job. You're very entertaining. And like I said, you're very, very original. So really, really enjoyed the time. If there's anything else you would like to share, promote, go on ahead and do it. Thanks again for doing this with us.
No, I appreciate you guys doing this and giving all of us a chance to talk about our favorite subject ourselves. Yes. We do like to do that. And hopefully people out there can hear how many different ways there are, because everyone asks me that wants to get into the business, like, well, what do I got to do? What's the most important thing? And I'm sure from listening to you guys interview a whole bunch of different people, there's no path. It's, and especially now, it's just like you have the opportunity to create your own path. And so any advice that we give is just the way it worked for us. And clearly there are many different ways to get into the business and do what you love. And so hopefully if anyone's so inspired, they can feel motivated to go down that path. But no, I appreciate you guys reaching out to me, and best of luck to you guys down the road.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time. So that's going to do it here for this episode of You Know I'm Right, for our very special guest, Ahmed Fareed. And for my co-host, Joe Calabrese, I am Nick Durst, and this has been You Know I'm Right.